Most provocative drushes in all of Chazal about our view of religion and Torah appears in Pirkei Avos as well as in the Medrash in Parshas Ki Tisa. V'haluchos masei elokim heima v'amichtav michtav elokim hu charis al haluchos. So Pasuk twice stresses that the luchos were given from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, written by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then not just masei and michtav, which are the first two clauses in that Pasuk, which make the point pretty clearly, masei elokim michtav elokim. But the end of the pasuk, charos al haluchos. So the literal translation is they were deeply inscribed. They weren't just written as letters, as we saw in the Gemara. Those of you who saw the intervening Gemara, k'sav b'luchos b'neis hayu omdim. But Chazal sense in the word charos an allusion to the word cheros. Al tikri charos el cheros. She'en lecha ben charon el misha osek batara. Now, on first glance, that would be the most contradictory statement imaginable. You're someone who's committed to Talmud Torah and mitzvos, and you're free. Free would typically be someone who is absent of any restraints or any constraints, can do whatever he or she wants. And buying into a world of avodas Hashem means obligating yourself and mandating yourself and becoming a mitzvah v'yosa. So in part, freedom has to be seen in a broader scale, in a broader sweep. So Chazal, one drush in Chazal is charis or charis min hagalios, that's in particular to outlast all persecution and discrimination and pressure and political political oppression and persecution. So Torah provides us with that spirit in that broader historical sense. In part, of course, the greatest prison that man lives within is the prison of his own mortality. And to liberate yourself from mortality, to be able to be eternal and immortal, and to associate with something larger than the 80 to 120 years you occupy this earth with, but to live beyond yourself and beyond your time on this earth and beyond human intercourse and human interactions provides cheros. So partially, understanding cheros is broadening beyond human experience to national experience, to immortal post-human experience. But even within human experience, ironically, so much oppresses man, so much dreariness, so much pettiness, so much of human experience saps and draws human energies, and someone who towers above the booming and the buzzing masses, who towers above that and is committed to Torah and understands. And a very beautiful series of essays written by a British philosopher called Isaiah Berlin. You may have heard of him around the World War II. So he wrote an essay, a series of essays called The Four Freedoms. And two of the freedoms he distinguishes between are freedom from and freedom to. Freedom from is the typical conventional definition of freedom. I'm free to do whatever I'd like. I'm totally without any constraints and limitations. We've seen in the modern context how that can be very enslaving, both physically, chemically, as well as emotionally and psychologically. People that want to experiment with substances, experiences, without restraints, it's a gateway to indulgence, which in turn is a gateway to addiction, which in turn is a prison whose bars are invisible, but whose bars are ironclad and don't allow any exit or any liberation. And addiction is the dark and ugly side of unlimited indulgence and unlimited freedom, shattering all boundaries. To a degree, we've seen the fallout of not just addiction per se, but of shattering boundaries and limitations which normally shape human experience, gender boundaries, race boundaries, and then somehow we feel that we're in a world that's morally adrift and a world which is incapable of articulating morally staunch positions because the threat of political incorrectness and of establishing boundaries that are healthy and that are normal. Gvulos sam Hashem ba'olam, Hashem creates boundaries in this world. Yotzer or v'arechoshech, oseh shalom v'areisakol. They don't have to be moral statements. Night isn't immoral. Night isn't less than day. It's just different. Yotzer or v'arechoshech. Hashem creates gvulos. Of course, for most of us, Baruch Hashem, we live within our legitimate limitations, and we're not addicts per se, but think of what are the types of mental strains and mental burdens and emotional burdens we've adopted or born because of our pursuits of, and how can we liberate ourselves from those mental burdens? It may not be addiction in the classic physical sense. What are we addicted to? What are you addicted to in this world because you've pursued this world with absolute freedom and no restraints? And it's a very interesting study I read yesterday, I think, in the Times about good parenting, and they made a chilek between, brisker chilek, tzvei dinim, between psychological control and behavioral control. The point of the article was that parents and, I guess, teachers shouldn't be involved in psychological control. Shouldn't try to shape your psychology or make you dependent on me or any. But behavioral control means what you should or shouldn't do. If you tell your child you can't be out late at night, you can't watch this internet site, you can't. That's not psychological control. That's behavioral control, setting limitations, and that's healthy. Psychological control is unhealthy. We're actually trying to bear into that person. And then they try to articulate what the difference is between healthy behavioral control as opposed to hope in yeshiva, or getting some degree. Obviously, you're older, you're not kids anymore, you're not teenagers, but some degree of behavioral control, what's expected, schedule, appropriate forms of behavior, aberrant forms of behavior. We're hopefully not creating psychological control. We're hopefully creating that freedom and respect where you don't feel like we're invading whom you are and setting certain limits or creating certain dependencies. Hopefully. Hopefully it's a meeting of convergence of two psychologies rather than imposition. Control will be, I'm imposing my personality on you. Convergence would mean we have common interests and you feel that my ideas and our values are something which resonate within you and therefore you want to embrace those psychologies. So it's important to think about and to invert what we typically view religion as. We typically view religion as very restrictive. And I think for many of you, that's probably a nice awakening this year. So often, before you fully understand religion and its value, you do see it as restrictive, and you can't, and it's a series of don'ts, and repressive, and suppressive, and suffocating. And I think having lived religion organically, not just sporadically, but living it in full and seeing it, hopefully in a blend that's very, very attractive and very, very high-minded and visionary, able to see religion is really not about no's and don'ts. It's about expressing and empowering and changing and living a fulfilled life. And the series of don'ts are just HaKadosh Baruch Hu's way of stabilizing and modulating human experience, which if left unfettered and unrestrained would spiral out of control and spiral. And so the ultimate goal of religion is not to shut down human experience, but to enhance it and to ennoble it. I certainly know what my life, I've lived a good portion of my life, I certainly know what my life would be like retrospectively, it hadn't been lived in the spirit of Torah. I don't feel repressed. I feel like I'm a free man. I don't buckle to. It hit me very, very harsh during the previous elections when a lot of people were feeling so. Those who were opposed to Trump, and again, the polarities here are very, very sharp. Unlike other elections, if you're opposed to a candidate, you were really opposed to a candidate. It's not like Obama and whoever he ran against and McCain. This is a real. It elicited sharp, sharp hostile reactions. And I just felt like that there was a level of servitude to the world of politics and the world of transient human experience that doesn't reflect well on a Ben Torah. It doesn't mean we're escapists. Doesn't mean, but ultimately we understand that there are larger narratives and larger dynamics that Bas Verdun doesn't really affect. And obviously we have to participate in politics, and that's the story of Purim and Haman and Achashverosh. But I'm not comparing the two. I'm just saying the same indulgence and engagement in politics. So it's an important medrash to think about. Do you see yourself as a free man, and are you able to articulate freedom too? That now that you've stabilized and modulated human experience, now you can really accomplish something. Freedom to do something. Freedom to. An addict is probably the greatest servant or slave imaginable because his addiction saps all of his energies and all of his schedule and can't produce anything. People who have the freedom to produce may have to bind themselves to certain institutions, communities, relationships. I mean, just think of a marriage. A marriage is binding yourself to someone, but it creates incredible freedom and opportunity to build family, to build relationships, to build ideas, to build communities. And that's a good segue into tomorrow. This is not meant in any way, shape, or form to alter anyone's behavior tomorrow. This is just It's what I think you've begun to appreciate is to have honest and mature conversations in ways that are respectful and don't have an agenda. And sometimes we create concessions and accommodations and we forget what the ideal is. So it's important to understand there are multiple ideas. Ideals that maybe are more relevant to your context, maybe ideals that are elusive and not relevant but still should be staked out. So let's start with a shocking statement. Okay, whoever's running tomorrow, you should know it's Bittul Torah. You can't argue with that statement, right? Anytime you take time from Torah learning for anything else, it's Bittul Torah, unless it's a mitzvah. Let's assume tomorrow isn't a mitzvah per se. Whatever money people may be raising would probably be given anyway through some other vehicle. We've long passed all these marathons and bike races. They're nice vehicles to create tzedakah. I mean, is there more tzedakah generated by all the fanfare? Possibly, but not dramatically so. fact, I saw one issue of a Facebook post this week. He said, I will not pay for your trip to Israel. Just give me the name of the institution. I'll be happy to donate the money. It's basically, this has become a front to create stucco, but ultimately people just want to give stucco. So it's a nice way to generate interest. It's obviously you have to be Mevatel Torah. If it's stucco, it's not Mevatel Torah. But let's assume that the larger core of tomorrow is not about fundraising, but about everything that's healthy, about Yushalayim and Am Yisrael and physical fitness. And I have no question in my mind that Rav Lichtenstein would be terribly, terribly opposed to anyone running in the marathon tomorrow based on numerous, numerous experiences that we had in the past that were far less than a large portion of the boys running and taking a Friday off. But whatever, we're not stuck necessarily in paradigms. We try to be, adjust ourselves and adjust our policies. Now, why aren't we making a bigger issue of it? Why aren't we opposing it? Well, here are the two sides of the equation. One side of the equation is we're not really at the Madrega, more or less, where our lives reflect absolute and uncompromising commitment to Talmud Torah. Basically, your life right now is a melange and a patchwork of Talmud Torah and Bittul Torah. And I'm sure you waste time from Talmud Torah for lesser experiences without the redeeming qualities that tomorrow's marathon will have for those who are running, with this physical fitness, or being with Am Yisrael, or bringing Yerushalayim. So until you reach that Madrega, it's a little bit off all of a sudden to... If you're mamish learning every single minute and going to sleep and sleeping as much as little as possible, say, but most of you are not at that stage right now, and therefore, on the other hand, and that's the other side of the equation, okay, but this is your year to try to live up to that standard as much as you can. It speaks a little bit to the Super Bowl speech that I gave, and maybe watching the Super Bowl 2019, okay, but the year that you're in yeshiva in the Beis Hashem, maybe it calls for slightly different, and especially when it's time that's been allocated. So if it's Matzei Shabbos, okay, so Matzei Shabbos, it's not time necessarily has been allocated for Talmud Torah, so I'm not violating the Pasuk in Shlach, ki Dvar Hashem Baza. Dvar Hashem Baza is when you take something that's oriented to Torah and you flip it around, you invert it. So let's say that's not, and generally that's a good message to think about when you leave yeshiva. Especially when you leave yeshiva, the time you've allocated to Torah really has to be sacrosanct. If you say, this is my Seder, that has to be non-vite. Basically, the only people that succeed in long-term learning are those who sacrifice their schedule and protect it aggressively. So you have a bar mitzvah, this is my time to learn, I'll be a little late, or I'll make it up. Or if it's just willy-nilly, when the time calls for it and my schedule allows it, there are a million and one different things that will intercede in your schedule, and you won't get to that learning. So you have to really... When you get back, let's say 2 years from now, 1 year from now, whatever it is, and you're in college X, college Y, and this is my time to learn, your parents want to go out for dinner? No. I'll go out later. I'll go out Sunday night when I don't have Seder, Sunday afternoon. Not in a mean way, but that's really the way towards successful Kiviyas Itim Latara when you're young. When you get older and life has more of a flow to it, but certainly at this point we're trying to create ironclad boundaries. So those are the two sides of the equation. This is time that's been allocated to Seder. It's not just dead time. It's not just a break. It's not just the weekend. It's you here in the yeshiva. On the other hand, you're not really living. And I've no interest whatsoever in anyone in this room pulling out from the race tomorrow. It would be silly. You paid the money. You already signed up. My interest is twofold. First of all, to shock your imagination and let you see realities that maybe you don't see, alternative trajectories and alternative narratives, because I think it's always healthy for you to check yourself and not just assume, oh, this is the only ideal, but there are other ideals. And number two, and this is what really interests me, is that, so you're taking tomorrow off, and again, it's a shorter day, but that creates a certain amount of pressure that should be internal to make today as saturated as possible and as intense as possible. It's okay, tomorrow I'm taking off time, but now, and generally that's a good way to condition yourself. When you know you're entering a day or a week or a period in which you're not going to learn that much, whatever it happens in life, it's going to be a week, you'll be very busy, it'll be a day that you... So the day before, the week before, the period before, has to be some forward thinking and awareness. Okay, I'm not going to be able to learn that much in 2 weeks, for the next week, for the next month, however you slice it. Let me make sure that at least until that point, I focus as much as I can and I work as hard as I can and I learn as much. So my interest is not in any way to create any pressure on anyone to change their strategy and schedule for tomorrow. My wife every year wants me to run with her. My wife runs. I feel on principle I have to be here and I have to give shiur for those who stay. And even if no one stays, it has to be a certain image and a certain message that's presented. I just want you to realize that, not to just fall sheepishly, that this is the only ideal, but there are other ideals. And right now, this is an ideal, which we feel is legitimate enough that we are allowing you to engage in it and to make that decision rather than putting our foot down and saying no. But it's not the only ideal. And if you came to me and said, next year, let's say, should I learn or should I run? I think it would be a healthy conversation. And again, I wouldn't try to enforce the conversation or to tilt the conversation, but I think it would be an important conversation for you to have. And post facto, to even have that conversation in your mind today, to know why you're doing it and to do it for the right reasons. And again, I don't recommend you stay up all night doing mishmar. That won't bode well for your physical fitness tomorrow. But just until the normal time tonight, really try to make sure that you don't waste today. And especially since I'm going to be out of the base meters probably till 4 or 5. So I want to make sure you had makaros. And especially, again, it's a bit of a gut check, especially for the boys who are running tomorrow, you're not going to have shiur on what you're preparing today. So it really is a gut check as to where you are. Are you in high school? And since you're not going to be in shiur tomorrow, you don't have to prepare today's makaros. Or basically, you're really interested in Talmud Torah. There's a whole blatant Shabbos that you may never get back to for a long time. And there's a chance to see certain makaros, I mean chasinos, and that's it's important on its own, even if you're not going to have shiur tomorrow. So certainly I would expect the people that aren't coming to shiur tomorrow to have a double reason to engage in today's learning, because tomorrow you won't be learning, and because also it's a good message to yourself. I don't just learn for shiur. Okay? Shikach. Okay. Let's see as much as we can about four different issues. Arba Nosim Sholim.